The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, this is Joel Hilliker filling in today for Stephen Fleury. I am here at Ed Stone enjoying the confines of this basement radio studio. I'm here with my entire family. We're actually helping with the Philadelphia Youth Camp for a couple of weeks here, and we're just having an amazing experience here. My two daughters are attending as campers. My nine-year-old son is enjoying the outdoors, building forts and making himself a nuisance in various ways. But we're just having a wonderful experience here. I'm very grateful to have this opportunity. And this is quite a terrific experience as well. I tune in pretty much every morning at 7 a.m. Edmond time. I always enjoy hearing Mr. Fleury and getting the latest news and hearing his insights. And he asked me to take one of the programs here while he's teaching classes and so on. So I'm eager to share something with you I've had brewing on my mind here for at least a couple of weeks now. I wanted to start by going back to the speech that U.S. President Donald Trump made in Poland earlier this month. He gave a speech in front of the Poles there. He was extolling the virtues of Western civilization. And we'll start by just playing a little portion of that speech, clip one.
Americans will never forget. The nations of Europe will never forget. We are the fastest and the greatest community. There is nothing like our community of nations. The world has never known anything like our community of nations. We write symphonies. We pursue innovation. We celebrate our ancient heroes, embrace our timeless traditions and customs, and always seek to explore and discover brand new frontiers. We reward brilliance. We strive for excellence and cherish inspiring works of art that honor God. We treasure the rule of law and protect the right to free speech and free expression.
Now, I found those words quite refreshing. You actually don't hear that kind of defense of Western civilization the way that he was expressing it, really anything like that very often these days, praising things like excellence and brilliance and extolling virtues like the rule of law and the celebration of history's heroes and timeless traditions. He talked about symphonies and works of art that honor God. These things are worth celebrating. They really are important. We celebrate those things here. The organization behind KPCG also sponsors the Armstrong International Cultural Foundation, and one of the aims of that organization is to really highlight the very best of the human spirit. What is it that human beings are capable of producing when they're really committing themselves to excellence and perfection? The concert series that we have at Armstrong Auditorium has just featured some of the most amazing music and the finest quality performances that I've experienced in my life, and just amazing compositions, fantastic performers. I've really seen some wonderfully inspiring performances there. So at any rate, it was unusual to hear those types of things spoken in a public speech like that, because so much of what we hear denigrates Western civilization. So much of what you hear in society today and in public discourse is actually encouraging us to view everything through the lens of multiculturalism and relativism, which not only says that every culture is equally valid and excellent, but actually that other cultures are superior to Western culture. Like there's something inherently wrong and impure about Judeo-Christian culture. And of course, it's dressed up in language that sounds very noble, but this trend has been terribly destructive. And so many of the values that have underpinned our society for generations are being challenged. They're being undermined. And I'm talking about very basic values, values like a strong family. You know, this is something that should be uncontroversially seen as a positive. Somehow this has become very controversial. The value of classic education, the value of studying history, all of these things are being challenged. These, you could really see them as you know, foundational underpinnings of our society. And education is becoming more a matter of being indoctrinated with a hatred for the English-speaking people's contribution to civilization. And as you would guess, and actually, you know, to be honest with you, this kind of took me off guard. I was caught off guard by the response. It seemed to me like when I heard that speech, there wasn't anything particularly controversial about what he said, but that speech really triggered alarm bells for those who are steeped in this way of thinking that would view any defense of Western civilization as inherently evil and racist. And as I said, I found those words refreshing. I was actually quite moved by some of what he said in that speech, but there were a lot of people who had a very different reaction. The Washington Post published an article by one of their journalists, Jonathan Capehart. It was on July 6th. The title of this article, Trump's White Nationalist Dog Whistles in Warsaw. And I'll just read a quote from this article. He quotes President Trump saying, "We write symphonies." He says, "What on earth does that have to do with anything? It's bad enough Trump is doing the one thing his predecessors studiously avoided, engaging in the battle of civilizations talk that inflames anger and tensions with Muslims, particularly in the Middle East. You don't want to inflame anger and tension with Muslims. In that one line, taken in context with everything else Trump said, what I heard was the loudest of dog whistles," Mr. Capehart says. "A familiar boast that swells the chests of white nationalists everywhere." Now, President Trump didn't say anything about race. He's talking about the West. He was talking about the civilization that produced great works of art and great pieces of music. Mr. Capehart accuses him of using a dog whistle. He's accusing the president of speaking in code words. You know, he's using terminology that only other white nationalists can understand. Mr. Capehart is a black, openly gay journalist. He actually cried openly. He cried on television when Donald Trump was elected. And he's helping people understand President Trump's real intent. He knows what President Trump really meant when he was praising Western civilization for writing symphonies. Did you know that symphonies are racist? I did not know that. I was not aware of that. Did you know that praising the civilization that created the symphony is racist? Sam, I think it would be a good idea to just listen to a symphony for a minute. Maybe you can just play that while I'm talking here over this next Brahms Symphony Number 4. You can just play the first movement of that for a while. This is a good soundtrack to the discussion here. And I don't intend this to be a dog whistle to white nationalists, but just to show, we're talking about one of the great cultural achievements of Western civilization, the symphony. And this is one of the best, in my opinion. But it wasn't just the Washington Post. There were other media outlets, similar statements from other journalists and other pundits who insisted that what Donald Trump really meant was a defense of whiteness or something along those lines. So this is what Salon.com wrote about this. That's always a good representation of the liberal view. It said, "Trump argued that Western read white nations are the fastest and the greatest community, and that, quote, the world has never known anything like our community of nations. He crowed about how Westerners read white people, write symphonies, pursue innovation, and always seek to explore and discover brand new frontiers, as if these were unique qualities to white-dominated nations instead of universal truths of the human race across all cultures. Now, I thought that was kind of an interesting statement that they made. First of all, there was literally nothing in that speech that suggested anything about race, about symphonies or innovation or exploration or discovery being uniquely white. But I do think it's a bit funny when a writer like this assumes that all of these things are universal truths of the human race across all cultures. I mean, that smacks of a bit ethnocentric to me. Isn't it assuming that everyone views all of these things as positive, and that you're putting down cultures who don't view these things as universal truths? I mean, just to go back to the symphony, maybe you can boost Brahms up a little bit there. Just to go back to the symphony, this really is a very specific achievement of European civilization. It's a specific combination of instruments. It's a specific musical form. There's certain norms in harmony and structure and form. Other musical traditions are totally different. They value different things. They value rhythmic complexity or group participation or other things that these people wouldn't necessarily be interested in the symphony. And nobody's going to force the symphony on them, but it's just different. And there are cultures that are not interested in innovation. They don't put a value on exploration. But at any rate, there are plenty of people from plenty of cultures who think very highly of their own culture. And they celebrate and they praise their own culture. And the Washington Post and liberals in general, they don't seem to have a problem with that. It's expected. It's praiseworthy for someone to put a high value on their own culture. But somehow, we've reached a point where praising the cultural achievements of our civilization, praising virtues like innovation and exploration, celebrating our ancient heroes, embracing our traditions and customs, well, that's wrong. Well, that's nationalist. That's white nationalist. That's racist. What happens when you get to a point where people come to view their own culture with contempt? What happens when you actually come to view your own culture pretty much the same way that your enemies do? How long can you even survive as a people? Why has it become controversial to defend Western civilization? You can go ahead and fade Brahms out there. How has that become controversial? We're talking about just the increasing contempt that people, and I'm speaking primarily about America and Britain, but how is it that we've actually come to have contempt for our own culture and for our own traditions? That this has actually become routinely branded as nationalist and racist, just to praise the things that made us unique and, yes, even special. Well, the truth is there's something perverse in actually failing to recognize what has made our civilization unique and special. There is nothing wrong with seeing the value in the things that President Trump was talking about, seeing the value and recognizing that there is something special, there is something worth standing up for about those things. Now, that doesn't justify hatred of other peoples. And, there is something to be said for just recognizing, look, people in every nation and of every culture are important, and certainly God views it that way. God has high degree of concern and respect for all peoples. But the liberal view in the West has actually come to justify hatred of ourselves. And what's amazing is at the same time, they're giving other cultures a complete pass and acting like everything that they do is above reproach. The Washington Post criticized Donald Trump for praising the symphony. And of course, it was part of a broader point that they were trying to make, that there was this whole white nationalist underpinning to everything that he was saying. But just look at the culture that has taken its place in, say, America and Britain today. Look at what we are holding up as culturally important in our societies today, and just how much a very low and base culture has come to be embraced and celebrated in the United States and in Britain today. Popular culture celebrates terrible crudity and vulgarity. And instead of appealing to the very best of the human spirit, so much of it appeals to the very worst of the human spirit. It's degrading, it's demeaning, it's debasing. And a lot of it is terribly abusive to women and to the people in society that really are the neediest. And it exalts criminal behavior, and it exalts greed, and it exalts excess. As I was thinking about this, I was just reminded of an article that we had in the January 2017 Trumpet magazine, where it was just looking at the hypocrisy on the part of so many in on the left in the United States. And it talked about how just the week before the election in November, Hillary Clinton held a Get Out the Vote fundraiser, and it was a hip-hop theme event. And so she had rappers like Big Sean, Chance the Rapper, J. Cole, Jay-Z. If you just look up any of the lyrics of any of the songs of any of these rap artists, you will be appalled. And at that concert, there was a Big Sean was rapping a song about women being whores and objects to gratify himself. He was describing these terrible chauvinistic sex acts, just a torrent of vulgarity and misogyny. And Jay-Z, he's one that is really a darling of the left. President Obama invited him to the White House several times. He was spilling out profanities. He was rapping about sex, and he was using the N-word, and he was using the B-word for women. And his wife, Beyoncé, she performed a song called Foundation. This is full of vulgar language, sex language. I had no idea. I mean, that was actually performed at the Super Bowl this last year, which is, you know, one of the biggest media events of the year. And she performed that in dress. The dancers, she and her dancers were dressed basically to evoke the Black Panthers, which is an armed black nationalist communist organization. And the video of that song, it has hints of this racist government conspiracy during Hurricane Katrina. So this is who the candidate for the Democratic Party for president put on stage. And after Jay-Z and Beyoncé performed, they were joined on stage by Hillary Clinton, and she called Beyoncé a champion for women and so on. So they're willing to put up with all of that, and they're willing to exalt that and put that up on stage and overlook all of the immorality and misogyny and bigotry that is so wrapped up in that. They have no problem with that. They see no irony in raising money for their presidential candidate by having rappers boast about their sexual feats. There's nothing strange about that. And yet somehow, when President Trump comes out and says, "We write symphonies," this is evidence of white nationalism. It's very, very strange. It's very hard to understand how we could have come to this point. Think about education. Think about how foundational education is to a functioning civilization and to the continuation and the perpetuity of a civilization. And you look at how education has come to be treated, and I'm talking about a valuable classic education, you know, learning about history, learning about the things that have really contributed to the good that America and Britain have contributed to the world. And there is a lot. There's a lot of good that they have contributed. And just education, good quality education in general, it's come to be treated with contempt among so many of our young people. Even just virtues like working hard and studying hard, these are viewed as a joke. I've seen videos of classrooms of, you know, high schools in America, colleges in America. There have been some very highly publicized events where students are basically besieging these colleges and treating the administrators and the instructors at their schools with absolute contempt. They just are totally disrespectful and demanding this and that and really treating them as if they're children. And there's just a chaos taking place in so many of our educational institutions, and teachers are really under siege. These students are not interested in getting an education at all. The standards are plummeting, and in so many areas, the students do not care. They're not interested. I think they actually feel a certain amount of power in creating chaotic conditions within these classrooms and showing the teachers that they know that they're the ones really in charge. And when these students perform so abysmally, I mean, there are all kinds of studies out there showing just how many of our children are not being served well by the educational system. They're not learning how to read. They're not learning how to do math. They're not learning history. And when these students don't perform there, they don't perform well on these tests, well, you always have liberals who are ready with their explanations for why that is the case. And guess what? It's never the students' fault. The students bear no responsibility. It's because they're poor. You know, set aside the fact that you have even far poorer people in other countries who somehow manage to become educated, who somehow manage to learn how to read, or it's because of their family problems, or it's because the tests are racist, or the teachers are racist. They can't really understand, you know, what the problems are that these poor students are going through. It's because of microaggressions or something. It couldn't possibly be something wrong with the students. It's not because they're not applying themselves. It's not because they're not working hard. It's not because they don't care a lick about actually getting educated. No, it's got to be someone else's fault. In California, you know, 75%, 3 out of 4 African-American boys do not meet state reading standards. Why is that? Is it really so hard to learn how to read? People do it all over the world. People learn how to read all over the world. The CI Factbook says that the literacy rate in Thailand is 97%. In Malaysia, it's 95%. Mexico, 95%. Colombia, 95%. Among African-American boys in California, 25%. Why? These kids are growing up in a culture that has become hostile to the things that underpin our civilization. They have grown up in a culture that is hostile even to the idea of being able to express yourself with good English. Somehow teaching young people to learn the language in a way that opens doors of opportunity in society, in a way that lifts them out of degradation, that helps them to rise above the conditions maybe in which they find themselves. Even that has come to be viewed as some kind of cultural imperialism, that there's something inappropriate about that. We can't have that. But we can excuse rank obscenity. We can excuse terrible manners and terrible disrespect. We can't expect our young people to treat other people with respect. We can't expect them to treat the authority within the classroom, to treat school administrators with respect. I mean, that's far too great of an ask. But we can excuse rioting. We can excuse high crime rates and drug abuse and pornography addiction and welfare addiction and a host of other problems. In fact, if you say that there's a problem there, well, you're a racist. If you say that kids in inner cities need to stop shooting each other, if you say that kids in inner cities need to start studying, they need to get an education, they need to make something of their lives, become productive members of society, well, that's racist. And if people look at these realities and they recognize that there really is a problem here, if they actually admit, well, that is a problem, that's something that we need to do something about, well, they know it's society's fault. It's not their fault. It's not the children's fault. It's because they're growing up in a society that is so stacked against them. Now, just think about the mentality behind that way of thinking. What other society has ever come to treat itself with that kind of contempt? Has that ever happened before? What happens when people come to view their own culture with contempt? What happens when you actually come to view your own culture with the same kind of disdain that your enemies view it? How long can you even survive as a people? You're listening to Joel Hilliker. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
We've been talking about the increasing contempt that people in America and Britain in particular have for our own culture and our own traditions. And to me, this is an extremely legitimate question that we need to think about. If you think about this subject, and President Trump talked about it in his speech in Warsaw earlier in July. I wrote about this in a trumpet brief, an email that we send to our subscribers. I'd like to encourage you to go onto thetrumpet.com and subscribe to the Trumpet Brief. It really is an excellent service that we provide. But I sent this out the day he gave the speech. I'd like to just go listen to one more quote that he gave in that speech in Warsaw.
We have to remember that our defense is not just a commitment of money. It is a commitment of will. Because as the Polish experience reminds us, the defense of the West ultimately rests not only on means, but also on the will of its people to prevail and be successful and get what you have to have. The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive. Do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Do we have enough respect for our citizens to protect our borders? Do we have the desire and the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it? We can have the largest economies and the most lethal weapons anywhere on Earth, but if we do not have strong families and strong values, then we will be weak and we will not survive.
Quite a lightning bolt statement there, and a lot of amazing questions that he asked there, starting with his question, does the West have the will to survive? Now, he went on to say that, in his view, we do have the will, but look at the evidence. Look at the evidence. How are we treating our own culture, our own heritage, our own history, our own values? He asked, do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? That's a amazing question, because you have a huge segment of American and British society that they can't even agree on what our values are. What are our values? The rule of law? He talked about the rule of law. Well, that's being undermined at every turn. You know, what else did he talk about? Innovation, ancient heroes, timeless traditions and customs, exploring and discovering new frontiers. You know, the response is, well, wait a minute. Are you suggesting that these are unique to white-dominated nations? If you praise the symphony, well, you're a white nationalist. What are our values? Do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Well, how can you possibly have confidence in something that you can't even define? More and more in our society, people say, well, who are you to try to define my values? Who are you to tell me what's moral or what's right and what's wrong? We've even gotten to the point where people are saying, well, who are you to tell me what's male and female? Who are you to tell me what is biological reality? That's how far we've jumped the shark. What are our values? What are they? What about strong family, with a man and a woman remaining committed to each other and rearing their own children? Well, we stopped defending that a long time ago. There are strong forces out there that are destroying that model of family, piece by piece by piece, and who is defending it? Who's defending that? I mean, that is, he asked, do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Well, strong family isn't one of the values that people are willing to defend. There was a Pew poll last month that found that for every American who opposes same-sex marriage, two Americans support it. 2-1. This past week, there was an amazing headline. News of a new Gallup poll came out saying that a record number of Americans now believe that polygamy is morally acceptable. Polygamy. More than 1 in 6 Americans says that that's just fine. You know, we don't define marriage as one man, one woman anymore. Who are you to say that a man has to limit himself to just one person. Well, what is marriage? What business does the government have regulating marriage? The government can't define love. Who people marry, that's their business. If they want to marry a committee, well, what's wrong with that? And who are you to say that there's anything wrong with what anyone would want? What are our values? What are they? You know, I think those values, it was pretty well universally understood a few generations ago, but I'll tell you, it doesn't seem to matter what value you might raise or put out there. Someone is going to challenge it. Someone is going to say, well, that's not who we are. Someone is going to tell you that that positive thing is actually poisonous, that it's toxic, that it's racist, that it's destructive. And they're going to tell you that some terrible, evil thing is actually good. We really are seeing like a very specific fulfillment of the prophecy said by the prophet Isaiah. He said, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." Woe! To those who make that mistake, you can't have a civilization that confuses good with evil. You can't have a civilization that can't tell the difference between darkness and light or between sweet and bitter. You have to be able to make judgments about what is actually good and actually evil. You have to value reality. You have to value truth. Otherwise, you're going to have woe, real woe. Because you're going to be out there attacking what is good. You're going to be exalting the bad. You're going to be, you know, if you see a light, you're going to shoot it. You're going to be walking in darkness. You're going to be filling your life with bitterness. You're going to be undermining your own civilization at every turn. Well, that's exactly what is happening in America and Britain today. Now, President Trump said, "The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive. Do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost?" He said, "Do we have the desire and the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it?" Those are excellent questions. Those are very, very important questions. Now, he... You know, well, let's listen to how he finished his speech. Clip 3.
"I declare today for the world to hear that the West will never, ever be broken. Our values will prevail. Our people will thrive. And our civilization will triumph."
Now, I don't blame President Trump for trying to put a positive conclusion to this speech. He's speaking to a bunch of people in Poland, but... Is what he said there true? Is that true? That the West will never, ever be broken, our values will prevail, our people will thrive, our civilization will triumph? What does the evidence show? What does the evidence show? What is there to back up that assertion? That, well, you know, come what may, no matter what obstacles we may face, no matter what problems we may encounter, that we are going to triumph in the end. I was, I guess this was a couple of weeks ago. I don't have the date in front of me, but there was an article on townhall.com by John Hawkins that struck me. The title of the article is "Our Civilization Deserves to Fail." And he talked about the fact that, look, you don't want to see a civilization fail. You don't want your country to suffer. I mean, if you have a friend who's doing something stupid, you know, you don't want to see him go down. Nobody has that desire. But, and he says, you know, "This is the greatest country ever on God's green earth," talking about the United States. "We have the most incredible military, the most powerful economy, and we've done so much for the world. Without us, the bad guys would have won World War I, World War II, and the Cold War. We've been the indispensable nation." But then he asks, "Are we still? Is America still the indispensable nation? I'll just read a bit from this article. He says, today, Americans would rather sit out a war, no matter how important, rather than see our soldiers die as they did during World War I. We weren't able to deal with less than 4,000 deaths in Iraq, while we lost more than 13 times that number in World War I. Our industrial production was the decisive factor in the Allied victory in World War II. Just to give you one example, when the war started, we had 3,000 planes, and by the time it was over, we had produced 300,000. Could we do that again? No. Just no. Do we still have the sort of leadership it took to win the Cold War? The jury is still out on that one, but I doubt it. If the Soviet Union were still around today, half our military secrets would be leaked to it through the New York Times, while idiots would laud the leakers improving transparency in government, quote unquote. Even while Reagan was taking the steps that brought the Soviets down, Hollywood and the Democrat Party were fighting him every step of the way, and we've gone even further backwards since then. You know, it really is amazing how much you see this contempt for our civilization manifesting itself in the way that the press handles what's happening in Washington, the way the press handles domestic issues that it gets fixated on versus international threats. You know, there really are issues. There are nation-threatening issues that are facing America today, that are facing Britain today, both within our countries and without. And just look at what the media is fixating on. Look at the headlines. Look at what they see as the big threats to society today. This John Hawkins article continues along those same lines. Hoover Dam was built in 5 years. Today, they would be hashing things out with lawyers and environmental rights wackos for that long, and it is doubtful that it could be built at all. Remember when we shocked the world by putting a man on the moon in 1969? Well, today we're no longer capable of going to get the flag we left there. Instead, we're obsessing over men with mental problems who believe their women should be treated like real women. There are more educated people than ever before, but fewer people who seem capable of thinking. We've gone so far backward that, as the great Thomas Sowell said, the problem isn't that Johnny can't read. The problem isn't even that Johnny can't think. The problem is that Johnny doesn't know what thinking is. He confuses it with feeling. That really is true. And I love Thomas Sowell. I'm a huge fan of Thomas Sowell, a man who really, he grew up in very, very terrible circumstances and educated himself, and it just is an outstanding economist and writer. When he retired earlier this year, I was pretty disappointed by that. But if you think about how much we are doing to ourselves. We've done this to ourselves. We're doing this to ourselves. You see this drama playing out day by day by day. Just going on within this article, it says, as America's problems have gotten bigger and more intractable, our politicians have created phony problems to solve instead of dealing with real issues. They may not care if North Korea can hit America with a nuclear weapon or whether Social Security will still exist in its current form in a decade, but they can talk your ears off about the women's dress code, Civil War statues, and the name of the Washington Redskins. Unfortunately, our Congress is a reflection of our culture, which prizes celebrity, outrageous behavior, attention whoring, and meaningless expressions of how much people claim to care above all other things. There was a time when being a jerk prone to emotional outbursts of nonsense was looked down upon, but today it means you get a reality show at best and a bigger Twitter following at worst. And he concludes this article, and just think about this. I mean, I think this is It's hard to argue with the conclusion that he draws here. There are still a lot of good people in this country, but as a nation, we've become complacent, decadent, and jaded. We're the trust fund kid living off the money great-great-granddad left us while the family business we don't understand fails. What we have in America, it's rare. Historically, there are a lot of extremely prosperous free nations that don't have to fear invasion. Because of that powerful military. That means we are squandering an inheritance left to us by previous generations of Americans that we may never have again once it's lost. We foolishly assume it will be this good forever, even though we laugh at and impugn many of the ideas, attitudes, and principles that were responsible for our success in the first place. America is not on track for a happy ending, and as much as I hate to say it, we are going to richly deserve the pain, misery, and disaster our own actions are going to bring down on our heads one day. Now, that is a terrible conclusion to come to. But I ask you, can you argue with what he is saying? Can you argue with what he's saying? The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive. Well, sadly, I think the evidence gives us a pretty resounding answer to that fundamental question. You're listening to Joel Hilliker. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
In that Warsaw speech, Donald Trump asked if we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost. Well, that's an outstanding question. A week ago Friday, I visited Normandy, France, to see the American D-Day beaches, Utah and Omaha. I also visited Pointe-aux. And it was an amazing experience. It was really humbling and awe-inspiring to see the bunkers that those soldiers faced, the sands that they stormed, the cliffs they scaled. And those sites really are worth visiting. And it just resonates with the history of these men. You think about the same age as the boys that are going to college today, so many of them, and they faced death and they spilled blood for no less a cause than to save civilization as we know it. D-Day, of course, was a massive, incomprehensibly massive operation. June 6, 1944, over 156,000 Canadian and British and American men flew nearly 15,000 sorties. They dropped 7 million pounds of bombs. They piloted nearly 7,000 vessels. It was the largest one-day amphibious invasion in history. And by the end of that day, they had a beachhead that led to Allied victory in World War II. They had landed 20,000 vehicles. Nearly all of the soldiers involved, 150,000 soldiers, were on European soil. Now, in the process, in that one day, 5,500 Allied men were wounded or gone missing, and over 4,500 of them had been killed. Now, those soldiers had the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost. They traveled to Europe because they believed in something. They went there to liberate the continent from Nazi tyranny. While we were over there, I was there with my family. We visited the American Cemetery in Colville-sur-Mer. There are 9,386 American men and women buried there in that cemetery. And it was extremely moving to be standing there among all of these white stone monuments and to think about all of these people, all of the people who are buried there, basically, just looking at the dates on those monuments, they were almost all clustered around just a few blood-soaked months in 1944. It was very emotionally overwhelming. These individuals were willing to do whatever was needed to defend our values at any cost. What would have happened if they had not been willing to defend our values at any cost? Well, freedom in Europe would have remained extinguished. Germany was in control. Freedom was gone. And we went to the Utah Beach Museum there, and there were pictures there of the French inhabitants of the town right there near Utah Beach, just being so thankful and overjoyed to see American soldiers coming to their aid. And as you drive through that area, you still see signs that proclaim the gratitude that the French have for these foreign soldiers, these boys who came from an ocean away and fought and died to set them free. And you can't help but think, looking at this, how different would be a response from today's youths, the Canadian and British and American young men, if there were a call to liberate France today. Do they have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Well, the question answers itself. In June 1940, after France collapsed to the Nazis, Winston Churchill gave a speech to rally Britain's fighting spirit, and he said, "Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Upon it depends our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions and our empire." Now, think about everything that he mentioned there. I mean, it's the same kind of message, essentially, that President Trump gave in Warsaw. All of those things are viewed with embarrassment rather than esteem. You know, we don't value Christian civilization and British life and the continuity of our institutions and the British Empire. We think those need to be extinguished. We don't believe in our civilization enough to defend it against those who would erase it. The Bible prophesies that Europe is about to be swallowed in tyranny again. And it's going to be even worse than the one that overtook the continent in World War II. And you know, in those prophecies, there isn't a single word about Canada and Britain and America putting up a fight. In fact, it talks about those nations being the victims of that empire. And you look at our nations, and particularly in contrast to what they were at the time of the last World War, and you can see why that's going to be the outcome. Even as these threats to our civilization are building, you have nuclear-capable North Korea testing a missile that can reach America. You have China swallowing the South China Sea. You have Russia gobbling up territory. Iran conquering Iraq, developing nuclear weapons. We have insecure borders. We have insolvent economies. But we're focused on battlefronts like racist police, transgender rights. That's where we are as a people. When I was standing at that cemetery in Colleville-sur-Mer, I cried. It was just overwhelming to recognize the scale of the sacrifices required three generations ago to beat back the evil that was present at that time. But it was also emotional, just recognizing how defenseless the present generation has made itself for when that kind of evil rises again. Well, that's going to do it for me today. This is Joel Hilliker. It's been a real pleasure spending this time with you. I'll be back on Wednesday morning in my usual slot on Trumpet Hour. That's at 8 a.m. Oklahoma time. Until then, take care.